Great crowd, great talks. Thank you very much for everybody for being here. I want to talk a little bit about some of the consequences of ocean acidification on some early life stage bivalves that are ubiquitous along the eastern seaboard from the Canadian Maritimes all the way down to Florida. Using multiple people's work today as opposed to talking principally about my own. So I know Joe's happy about that because you've seen my talk about it a little bit. Anyway, we're talking about hard clams and base scallops, actually. Barbarian, and Artifact and Arabian. Because of time constraints, I took out the Eastern Oyster stuff last night before I shipped off my own presentation. But you know, these are tremendous economic resources. Our shellfish equal jobs, equal protein for people. They're also ecologically incredibly important as components of marine coastal ecosystems. This is Joe showed another version of this same, another version of it, dissolving clam, essentially. This one was from a paper in 2009. I actually took the picture in around 2005 and I gave it, you know, used it a couple presentations, went to some people, it got picked up by the AP, and suddenly it was kind of all over the world. And what I like about it is just how visually striking it is, essentially, to see exactly what happens to a small clam, small bivalve, when exposed to these low pH, low omega, low saturation state conditions. This is from a 200 micron clam at an omega 0.6. These were actually in the mud, but this is day 0, day 4, and day 7. I was actually watching a TED conference as Carl Spina was talking, it was 6 months ago, watching it online. Bed at night. Just another exciting evening for Mark Green. And suddenly the slide came up, so anyway, I was thrilled to be in the for the 4 seconds. But anyway, I want to talk about the early life stages. You know, most bivalves have a larval stage of three-ish weeks, two to three weeks. We'll call it 21 days. Some are longer. Sea scallops, for example, as larval phase is like 45 days. But 3 weeks is kind of a good window. As most people mentioned, it's when they're most vulnerable. They're very small, so they have a high surface area volume ratio. And in general, they're made of a much more soluble form of calcium carbonate. The calcium carbonate comes in multiple what we call polymorphs or types, and the juvenile larval stage bivalves are typically aragonite or amorphous or calcium carbonate, which are much more soluble than, say, an adult of the same species. Generally speaking, 1.5 times more soluble. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the methods, kind of use standard methods when we run these experiments, and they can, you know, be these big Tygon tubing and barrels and water baths and gas proportionators and everything else. But it's all pretty straightforward. Their standard method is what everybody uses. You have your tank gas, principally of CO2. You have these things called gas proportionators here. Typically, you want to do things in a great big water bath so you can keep the temperature of the experiment constant as a function of time. And each of these individual chambers here in their lid represent replicates. So you run these things in multiple replicates. And by changing the proportion of the CO2, you can get you can approximate CO2 concentrations that we see today, that we're going to see in 50 years, that we're going to see in 100 years. And those are pretty easy to estimate because if we're, CO2 is dissolved very readily in water, so we know if we burn this much coal, this is simplifying a little bit, but if we know we burn this much coal, this is how much CO2 is going to be in the atmosphere, and then this is how much is going to be in the water. It's not, that is not rocket science. One of the things that I want to just drive the point home is that we know that ocean acidification is already from a biological, a physiological perspective when you look at these small organisms. In other words, if you compare today's larval shellfish with larval shellfish physiology and biology from prior to the Industrial Revolution and the water chemistry that they were exposed to then, you can always already see dramatic differences in things like survivorship. So that's what I think. Very interesting stuff. This is a paper from Stephanie Collins and Chris Gobler down in Stony Brook. And this is a hard plant larvae survival under past, present, and future CO2 levels. So the 2-week survival, it's essentially the percent that survive after 2 weeks for these larval hard plants. And you can just as easy as put CO2 in water, in seawater, like I showed you in those early experiments. You can strip CO2 out of water. And if you strip CO2 out of water, you can strip it down to these pre-industrial levels of, 250 or so parts per million. We can run the experiment, not altering the seawater chemistry at all with what we have today. What we're estimating is CO2 levels for mid-century, and then you can get really up to these super high levels in the future. If you do that, what you can see, so this is the worst scenario. Already we've seen between today and, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, there's a significant difference in survivorship for mercenary, on the order of 10-15%. And you can see the stepwise function as we go forward. With survivorship, coming up mid-century, well below 50%. Here's the bay scout, Artefactum irradiens, very popular little shellfish down in Long Island and other places. This is now a 5-week survival ship, again, under past, present, and future CO2. And this represents, I was just kind of amazed at this because the survivorship difference in this particular case is in excess of 30%. Okay? Very often, we run these experiments in here, and Joe, I think, made this point. I think it's so important that we often talk about today being kind of the baseline, Today's not really the baseline. The baseline was 100 years ago. And so there's a lot that's happened in that 100 years. And you can see, the changes in CO2, which have occurred in the past 200 years, are capable of significantly affecting survival of plant scallop. You can see the same thing with oysters, too, which they look out. So, what's the survivorship? What's driving it? Well, you can look at, for example, calcification rates, the rate at which these larval clams, they're in water, the egg goes up, the sperm goes up, they fertilize, and then it's all about just precipitating the shell, making the shell. And you want to do that quick, because the quicker you can get a good solid shell, you can develop then your feeding appendages, and you can start to feed. So the slower you calcify, the longer you are in your planktonic stage before you can actually get your own food, and you're dependent on the food reserves that are already stored in your body upon fertilization. So this is based on radioactive calcium 45, it's a calcium uptake. It's just, organisms uptaking calcium to build a shell. You can see 250, so this is the pre-industrial calcification, present-day calcification, and calcification kind of mid-century type stuff. And you can see that the calcification rate today is essentially half of what it was 100 years ago, at least for this particular species of the bay scallop. George Waldbusser out of Oregon has done some follow-up work on this stuff. Actually, it was prior to this paper, but he I was looking for one of the drafts that he published. I couldn't find it. It was too late for me to call him. It was over there. I was tired. So. If you look at it, we see some great FDN pictures today. So these are all different kind of cross-sectional pictures. This is now from hard plant, 36-day-old juveniles. So we took 36-day-old, this is Stephanie Collins, took 36-day-old mercenary hard plants, and then pre-industrial, present, mid-century, next century, so those are the CO2 concentrations that they were reared in for 36 days. And you can see, this was shown earlier today, the overall size is severely diminished. This is a cross-section. I was on Stephanie's dissertation committee, and I asked her to do this, and I think they were killed there, because, of course, these guys are incredibly small, and in order to envision how to get a cross-section, something that you can barely see. But anyway, one of the things that's interesting and obvious is just to look at the thinness or the thickness of the shell as you go from pre-industrial to present to mid-century to next century. The shell deteriorates dramatically. This is a picture of the head of the hinge and the umbilical region there, and you can see the deterioration and that starts to look like my, you know, my knees. So postal acidification, Scott Cooney in like 2004 said ocean acidification, the other CO2 problem. You can also say coastal ocean acidification, the other eutrophication problem. Joe mentioned this. You get a lot of nutrients going to the coastal zone, form of nitrogen, limiting nutrient, which exacerbates and causes algal blooms. Net heterotrophic, so you produce a lot of CO2 as a result of that. You pay a value, you produce a lot of CO2, decrease in pH. Estuarine acidification, coastal ocean acidification, is happening at a faster rate than ocean acidification from CO2 from the atmosphere. This paper, George Wallbus and I did in 2011. This is just the pH of the time series of Chesapeake Bay. That pH decline that you see there since 1985 or so is three times faster than the measured pH drops that you see out in the open ocean. And this has to do with the additive CO2 coming from the decay of organic matter from all those hog farms and everything else surrounding surrounding Chesapeake Bay. Here's this is the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. You know, Mississippi River comes down here, Coriolis bends that plume of water here to the right, and you can see here the omega values, and you can see toward the center, the core of that dead zone, relatively low omega values. The dead zone, because it's a region of low oxygen consumption, increasing CO2 and lowering omega. And this is some more from Ophelia et al. On the west coast, looking at upwelled seawater, and this is the sea CO2, and you can see that the level of sea CO2 along the coast during upwelling events are incredibly high. Shallow coastal water ecosystems have multiple stressors. You know, Casco Bay has multiple stressors, and this is one thing we need to think more and more about moving forward. Not only is there acidification, you know, it's much more vulnerable to increasing temperatures. You know, shallow water is much more sensitive to the short-term atmospheric temperature changes. Really warm periods can really drop the temperature up, for example. It's also more susceptible to these dead zone regions of hypoxia. So, for example, some of the work being done recently is looking now not just at the increase or decrease of CO2 and how that's impacting survivorship, growth, lipid production, whatever it might be, but they're starting to do these experiments using multiple stressors, and they get very statistically complicated. But, for example, here is an experiment looking at increased temperature in CO2 in mercenary, and you can just see the dramatic effect. Here it is, the pre-industrial, contemporary mid-century, percent survival of hard clam after 20 days, pre-industrial, well over 40%, present day about 30%, and then percent survival mid-century. And you can see what happens when you jack that temperature up just another 5 degrees. Much, much more significant mortality at any given point. There's also work now looking at acidification and hypoxia, right? And there's work looking at acidification, hypoxia, and temperature. So let me just jump to the conclusion. I apologize for this. The effects of acidification, I say, like the biological effects, the physiological effects, are already measurable relative to pre-industrial CO2 levels. Increased CO2, increased mortality, delayed the onset of metamorphosis, slow growth, depresses calcium uptake, depresses the sequester and the production of lipids that these little guys need in order to survive. You know, there's a whole bunch of biological indicators that are impacted. Most ecosystems, and this is very important, have multiple stressors that compound the effect of acidification on larval state bivalves. And they include warming water temperatures and hypoxia. And I think it's really what needs to get focused on in coastal ocean regions. Thank you.